We are back on the Festival Daily Buzz with Bitch Talk Podcast on KCPW and KCPW.org. I'm your host, John Wildman, here with one of my Bitch Talk teammates, Angela Tabora. And we're going to talk right now about the Slam Dance, in fact, the opening night film at Slam Dance, film about a father who. And we've got Lynn Sachs here. Lynn, it's great to have you here.
I am happy to be here.
All right. We'd like to start by giving our filmmakers the opportunity to introduce our audience to the film. So tell us about your film.
Okay. I think in the context of being here with Bitch Talk, I have to say this is a film from a daughter's point of view and from a woman's point of view.
Hear, hear.
Yeah, thank you. I think that in so many ways, as women enter the film world, one sad thing that's happened is sometimes women erase their subjectivity. And so this really is my attempt to grapple with my place in my family in relationship to my dad, my attempt to express both rage and forgiveness. And as you bring those two together, that's kind of the only way you can move along in your life. And I don't mean ahead professionally, but ahead and finding your own stability and kind of maturity, and sometimes that takes a long time. And so if your art making practice can give you a chance to pull the pieces apart and put them together, and that happens through a film, then the film is giving back to you. So that's kind of what Film About a Father Who is.
Well, yeah, it is the most fascinating profile of an individual. And their influence on the others around them, and regardless of the fact that it's the family of anyone, and it is a fascinating dynamic that you're able to capture. And you filmed this over how long? Tell our audience how long this footage was compiled.
The very first footage that I shot was from 1984, when I was just kind of, let's say, claiming myself as a filmmaker. And I have to say, also in Bitch Talk language, we could say, yeah, women want to be directors, but directors means you have to buy into the whole hierarchy of the movie business. Mm-hmm. And I think filmmaker is kind of a pretty good way of claiming something that women always had, makers. So I haven't really said it that way, but when I see the signs for
Lynn,
Bitch Talk.
Lynn, you're getting me riled up. Thank you. Preach on.
Preach on. Yeah, good.
Well, you know, in case our audience hasn't picked up on it, of course, your brother is Ira Sachs. So naturally, there were, you know, I was, when I first started watching the film, I was going, well, of course, there are cameras always around between the two of you, you know, but yes, there is a unique viewpoint on your dad, and you know, who was this amazingly charming individual, but had layers that by your own account in the film were never easy to get under and were never easy to get through to, and that seemed like almost like a lifelong pursuit of yours.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's interesting that you mentioned my brother, because he actually made a feature film that has shades of my dad, which is called 40 Shades of Blue. Mm-hmm. and I would say that for both of us, that the claiming of of a kind of relationship to our dad also had to do with figuring out who we are. And actually, last night at the premiere, Ira stood up. I was excited. I had no idea what he'd say, because he hadn't seen the finished film. And he said something that had to do with this film being about the search or the confrontation by a woman with masculinity. And I think we're in that moment in our society. We're actually in this sort of, maybe, let's say, one step along in the Me Too moment, where we have to say, like, who are men to us? I have a daughter, and she, like, recently went through a period where she was very critical of all men. And I'd say, well, what about your uncle, or what about your dad? Things like that. And that became sort of just anecdotal and situational. But I think that the nature of masculinity means that you get a package, and it's not every man is this sort of heinous individual, and not every man has to erase you know, the desire to be a man. And so there were many things about my dad that were like the essence of a kind of man I didn't want to, like, definitely didn't want to marry. But there was another side to him that was very, like, supportive of my work, and he never would miss a premiere, or we could have really good conversations about my friendships, and he would listen, and he was a good listener. He's not like the most outspoken person on a, like, that one-on-one kind of let's let it all hang out level, but he was a really good listener and was wise. And so I think that we're in a vital moment of discovering, like, what it is to be a man in the 21st century.
I love that you're talking about this, because I was just at a women's event last night, and we were talking about what happened with the Me Too movement. You know, everybody was all in and talking about it, and then it sort of fizzed, and then the Academy nominations come out, and it's like, oh, where did the women go? But it's like having these conversations, that's how we keep this movement ongoing.
Yeah.
And creating films with our voice, that's how we keep it going.
Yeah.
So thank you for bringing that up.
Well,
I think
thank
that's
you
so
for
important.
Saying, I just saw this popular movie, Bombshell, and, you know, it kind of upset me because it was presented as this feminist movie about, you know, these women on Fox television who one of them spoke out about the kind of sacrifices they had to make to get to the top. But yet the movie, you've talked about the form of the movie was so retro. You know, every woman had to be presented with exactly the right makeup and the same blonde hair, and she couldn't break out of it cinematically. Like, it was so super, it was such a superficial way of saying, go Me Too movement. And I was thinking, this movement is already past what they tried to do in that movie.
Well, there's also something that you do in this film that, you know, I don't know if I would attribute it to gender or just you specifically. And it is how you capture the commiseration between your brothers and sisters, you know, and their relationships with your dad, and how those relationships evolved, and I found that incredibly, it's something that I hadn't really seen, and I thought incredibly special how you were able to capture that.
Actually, that really affects me that you say that, and I have to say this from a man's point of view, because I think that I wanted to listen to young men. I've always felt this way. Like, to be a young man in our age, you know, and try to find who you are, how to say, well, again, like, how to say, yes, I have desires, but how do I express them? And one of my brothers, Adam, he talks about that people would look at, you know, call my dad the Hugh Hefner of Park City. And then there were plenty of people who would say, oh, I aspire to that. If only, you know, if only I could attain that moniker. But yet he's also said, that's, in a sense, that's not the person I want to be. I don't want to be his son. And yet I admire him, but that's not like the way that I want to be. And I think all my brothers, so I have three of them, and have shades of their father, like we all do have shades of our parents, but then we have to mark ourselves and make distinctions.
Yeah, I agree with you, John. I think that was my favorite scene, is sort of this therapy session among siblings. And it was really powerful because you all have different levels of relationships, you know, granted, you know, at what level, you know, the eldest and the youngest. And one of your sisters says, you know, she's like, I don't like being around you guys because you're complaining about all these things, but you don't really know what struggle is. Mm-hmm. I grew up poor. You grew up, you know, in this home and that. And I think that's also another really important aspect, is not only his effect on you personally, but his effect on your relationship with each other.
Yeah, yeah. I will say that, you know, this whole idea that we all kind of wonder, you know, how do I live with a parent? And I don't mean live in a house, but live with them in our consciousness. And I think that scene, which was the first time that all of us were together, was a kind of, let's say, a visual or like manifestation, something of nine different views of the same person. And that's why one of the things that kind of kept me going this film was that it's not a portrait. It's a cubist portrait. So you come at him from the angle in which and where you're seated. So that's one of the great things about cubism. It's not really about the face you see. It's the position from which you see that person, you know, and how do you express that? So I owe a lot to Pablo Picasso.
Well, let's talk a little bit about one of the, every film has a myriad of challenges. And the obvious challenge, you know, here is just the emotional connection to the subject and the film that you're doing. But, you know, we weren't part of your family. Your audience, you know, that saw the film on opening night, they're not part of your family. And so you have to distill all of this. You're in the editing room with all this footage and to communicate this and talk about that and what it was like and what were kind of like the hurdles for you to put the story together in a way that translated to someone other than yourself and Ira and Adam and your siblings.
I think that is very important. So as much material as any of us, media, like as we collect media, we create an archive. And the archive mostly is a happy one because that's what people choose to document and to witness. They witness everything, but what they choose to share and to use to shape memory, and that's media shapes memory and memory shapes media, and it's kind of a back and forth conversation. But as we move along in the years, the media sometimes replaces the memory. So one of the things that I had to figure out was how to offer this material to people who hadn't lived it and didn't have anything invested in it, and for whom this story of this family wasn't just an idiosyncratic kind of wow story. I kind of wanted to move as much away from the wow, and there's a little wow, but as possible, so that you could say, oh, well, you know, I can enter this because I have this particular relationship with someone in my family that reminds me of this. I would never say that it helps, you know, you learn something from it, but it sparks some kind of ability to your maybe ability or desire to work on those things yourself and not to dismiss all the media. And so I think one of the things about making a film like this is that it's the transitions from one shot to the next where where an audience could enter. It's like what you don't see, but you fill in those transitions, you fill them in, and they become like a synapse, and they connect to something you might have experienced.
Well, you definitely take the audience through a discovery process, you know, with this this portrait of your father. And again, the film the title of the film is Film About a Father Who, Slam Dance's opening night selection. We've been talking with Lynn Sachs, the director. It's been wonderful having you here.
Thanks for welcoming me.
The Festival Daily Buzz is brought to you in partnership with Films Gone Wild. You can find more info at filmsgonewild.com.
You're listening to the Festival Daily Buzz, and I'm your host, Angela Tabor, joined by my co-host, Lancia Wan. Welcome to our female shorts segment. We're really excited to have Ariane Labed, filmmaker of Ola. And from Take One Thing Off, we have Casey Bakumini, producer, and Scout Durwood, who is also a director and talent.
Yeah.
So thank you so much for being here. I want to start off with Ariane. Can you tell us a little bit about Ola?
So it's a short film that I did a year ago now. And it's set in France, where I come from, obviously, with my accent. And it's a story about a woman who arrives from Eastern Europe, from Ukraine, and she comes to France. We understand that she met this guy online, maybe to get married with him, and things just doesn't go the way she thought or he thought.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really love just how unapologetic this woman is. You know, she a lot of people would come into a new situation like that and just kind of succumb to what is expected of her as a woman. But I just love the fierceness of her, and she's like, nope, this is not me. I'm out.
Exactly. That's it. Yeah. Yeah. The way you describe it is exactly that. Yeah. I wanted to create a character who doesn't do any compromise, and she follows her intuition, and she's strong, but just by instinct, and she's able of a lot. Yeah. And she doesn't just try to please people, but she's very truthful to herself.
And Ariane, this is also, you premiered at Cannes,
yeah,
and this is going to be the first time you're showing it to a U.S. audience where you're actually here, is that correct?
Yeah.
How are you feeling?
I'm so scared. No, I'm always scared when I show my film anyway, because, you know, I feel very, very exposed and naked, but that's part of it, because I'm, you know, you do film socially to people, so it's always exciting, and then it's a new audience for me. It's a new, I guess people are gonna receive it in a different way than in Europe, and I'm very excited, and I can't wait to have feedback from people.
Awesome. And I wanted to pair these two different films together, because you guys have similarities, yet they're very different projects completely. So maybe Scout, if you want to talk about Take One Thing Off.
Yeah, Take One Thing Off is a 22 episode digital series. It's 11 music videos and 11 kind of comedy vignettes. We did it with my music label in Los Angeles. It's super fun. It's a very, we call it an existential odyssey, or a digital series of existential proportions. But it's kind of just like my musings on the world, and things are a little backwards. I think we can all agree. There's at least one thing we're like, how is this the system? So that's kind of the premise of the series.
And I remember reading something about how you described this entire series as be the strange you wish to see in the world.
Yeah.
Which I think applies to both of you. Yeah.
Okay.
Kind of connects with that from different perspectives. Absolutely. Yeah. I really loved it, Scout, because it was kind of just like peeking into your journal and being like, what's she thinking today? Because from each episode, I'm like, what is even going to happen now?
Right.
You know, you don't really know what to expect. And that's what I love, is just like the sheer absurdity of it, but also there's a thread. I mean, it makes sense. And for you, Casey, how did you get joined with Scout in this project?
In the most professional way. We met on a basketball league.
And I will say now, we are both lesbians. We met in a basketball league. It's just plain sports.
Women's only Tuesday night recreational basketball league.
I love it.
We got paired. I joined the team, and there was other lesbians on the team, and Scout just happened to be one of them.
What are the odds?
Yeah, I know, right? I don't know. Sports team? Or more? Yeah, it was kind of a perfect storm, and my label was so great. They gave me a little bit of money, and they kind of gave me the time and flexibility to do what I wanted with it. And Casey had not produced before and did a really incredible job of, like, I mean, we really just, like, I don't know the expression for it, but whatever, bad initiation. Like, we really rushed her into the clan.
Yeah.
Because it was just, the whole thing was like, we got this. And I think there was a lot of hubris in it, and kind of going, come on, we don't need money, we can do this. Our DP, John Gardner, was so great at kind of going like, nope. And then we'd be like, okay, no, but we can do something else. And so I'm so thankful that Casey was really, had the flexibility and stern but kind hand to make it happen.
And Casey, Scout did mention that this was sort of your first time producing, but you have been in front of the camera before. and after being in behind the camera and behind the scenes right now, did you just form your own production company as well?
I did indeed. Wow, you really have done your research. Yes, I did not enjoy being on the camera as much as I really do enjoy being behind it. And because of Take One Thing Off, I caught the bug. And telling stories. And, you know, Scout does something that is really amazing, which is she has a very clear vision and a creative voice, and she takes that with her. And you can see all the people that kind of gather around and find joy in that, and I would love that too.
You touched that kind of being your authentic self, you know what I mean? I think that can be really, there's so much value in that as a filmmaker, because you really are the only person with your own voice, whether that's stream of consciousness or you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and Ariane, you started as an actress, and you have many wonderful credits to your name, including a Volpe Cup Award, is that right?
Yeah.
And that's, you're only one of two actresses to win this award, so it's fairly prestigious from what I understand.
Yeah, thank you.
Where is it? You didn't bring it? You should wear it around.
Like a necklace. It's like big like that. Heavy, but no.
But
I'm still an actress, actually. I'm not.
Yeah, you're still in a bunch of upcoming things as well. But this was sort of your first directorial debut as a short, and it was shot on 16mm,
which
is quite the creative choice. But can you kind of talk about your process about how you came into this project, why you wanted to direct, what it was that made you shoot on film rather than video, and et cetera?
So I always wanted to direct. It just took me time because I love acting as well, and I was doing one project after another. And I was always saying, I'm going to do that one day, but I needed to take the time for it. It took me 2 years to do a short film, so yeah, I need to take the time. And but I always had it in the back of my head. When I did my first film at Edinburgh, I just realized that I knew that one day I want to direct as well. And so I started writing, and I don't know exactly how I came up with this story, but that's what happened. And it's kind of, I don't really feel that I started a new thing in my life, becoming a writer and director. For me, it's the continuation of my work as an actress as well, because I always try to choose my roles and the people I work with for the same reason why I did my film. It's one thing, it's not being in front of, behind the camera for me, it's one project, and it's my work as an artist in general. So I don't feel like it's my first film. Really?
Yeah. There's so many films that you've done before. And as someone told me once, it was a producer that said that shorts are harder than features.
It's, I don't know. I haven't done features.
I so disagree with that. Oh my God. No, the second season is more of a feature, and it's a behemoth. I mean, it is a beast. Features are a beast.
Hmm. For sure. But the time it took me, that for me, it's more about frustration somehow. Mm. It took me 2 years, and then I had 5 days of shooting, and I was like, oh no. Give me like a feature film now. I'm ready for it.
Yeah.
Just felt like so hard to just get that. And it's hard to create. For me, it was hard to write a character for in 27 minutes and mm-hmm. to try to develop the character, mm-hmm. you know, for it to be strong enough for people to get it. So it was a difficult exercise, but I guess it was my first thing as a director, so everything was difficult.
Yeah, you're cramming everything into a short amount of time versus a feature where you have a lot longer to talk and develop that story. But you're a trained dancer, Ayan, and did you put a little bit of yourself into the character as well? Scout obviously did.
We can talk about but specifically that dance when she's dancing in the living room. Did you choreograph that?
Yeah, I did. It's nice. Based on a Pina Bausch choreography.
I love that
mixed with like striptease type of moves, and it's a mix of things that I love, and we created that.
It's so good.
Yeah, that was my. I took so long for this scene because it was for me the heart of the movie. And then just quickly about the 16mm, for me it was very important to shoot in 16 because there is, except of the aesthetic part of it, because I think it's beautiful, and it fictionalized the topic somehow. I didn't want it to be a social drama or a documentary as a language. So for me it was very important to create frames and something very pictorial in it. And I love the process of shooting in film because it's when you don't have money, you know that the time is very precious, mm-hmm. and I love that.
Mm-hmm. Well, Scout, I wanted to talk about just the difference in each from episode to episode. Obviously, you have these really fun and funny music videos, but I also love the diatribes that you go on. I mean, my favorite episode, I think, is when you're schooling the generic cis white man on what real lesbianism is.
Oh,
and
yeah,
that's just one of my favorite episodes. And then you also schooled, I was watching it with some of our crew here, and the palm trees. You're talking about the palm trees in L.A. Is this true?
This is so true.
As a Los Angelino, I was devastated.
I knew that they were
not native trees. They're not native.
They're not native, but you broke a horrible fact. That.
That's my goal, really, is to take anything that people enjoy and shatter that joy.
Yeah, so it was also a learning experience for me, and I haven't been the same since. So thank you.
Brutal.
You're going to have to watch it to find out. Yeah. I think it's episode 7.
Allison Scagliotti's on him.
Yeah, to find out about the palm trees in LA. So anyway, we'll leave it with a cliffhanger.
Thank you guys all so much. We are the Festival Daily Buzz on KCPW. We were just talking with Ariane Lebed from Ola, Sundance Short, as well as Scout Durwood and Casey Bocumini from Take One Thing Off. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.